Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Show. I'm Tom Douglas here at the Hot Stove Society in downtown Seattle, right at 4th and Virginia, above Lola and in the Hotel Andra. All those little landmarks across the street from the Dahlia, around the corner from Sirius Pie. That's where we're all right here in the core. And the chef in the chapeau, where are you coming from today, chef?
I'm coming from my home office down in Madison Valley, two blocks from Luc, in my neighborhood. And having a great old time, been quarantined a little bit. So until further notice, we'll stay home and wait till this blows over, as they say.
Exactly. You know, no chances. We're not taking any chances. I am chef owner of several businesses here in Seattle, the Sirius Pie downtown, the Seatown Fish Fry and Snack Bar. I don't know if you've ever been there, if you're listening here, but a lot of people don't know where Seatown is. It's right at the north end of the Pike Place Market. If you know where Etta's is, a restaurant of ours for 26 years, it's right next door towards the market. So there's the Seatown, the Rub Shack, and Etta's are all right next to each other, and they're all combined for the duration of this COVID drama that we're in, so that they are more efficient. I also have our to-go joint out in Ballard. It's called Sirius Takeout, and there's a Sirius Pie there, and we do all of our dinner boxes and all the lovelies that come out every week. We have different dinner boxes every week. Next week, it's schnitzel. Is that right?
Schnitzel with noodles.
Schnitzel with noodles. I can't even say it. Schnitzel with noodles.
Does it come with, Tom, does it come with a poodle?
With a what?
With a poodle. You should have a poodle, too.
A poodle? Oh, okay.
Yes, a little dog.
Okay. No, it does not. It's not. We don't cook dogs, chef. Noodle. That's a French poodle thing. A chien. Isn't that a chien, a dog?
That's right.
A chien. Thank you for joining us on the show. We've been around here for close to 20 years, and the chef in the chapeau and I are our pals, despite what some people think. So, you know, people still think that I pick on you too much, and I am sorry.
It's okay.
I'll apologize every week because people misinterpret my love taps for some sort of something else.
It's like a good relationship. You know, you got to give and take.
That's right. We're going to continue today with our pass it down segments, where we don't let the recipe die with you. You pass it down and you share your family's history and lore and your celebrations along with your favorite recipes. And sometimes we even get to jump in and maybe solve some problems, because a recipe that was made by, let's say, a grandmother three generations or a great-grandmother three generations ago isn't necessarily as relevant as it could be, 70 years later. So you don't always have to do everything exactly the way great-grandma did, but it's nice when you can maybe doll it up and make it your own. We're going to talk to Jerry Andrews. She's here to talk about XOBC Wine Cellars. That's Brandi Carlile's private label and all the good work that it does. We're excited to have her on the phone. Last week, we uncovered some ingredients that we thought were underrated. This week, overboard and overrated. I think there's a few of those out there for me. I'll give you a hint to mine. Green beans out of season. They are generally tasteless wonders. Huh. And that, to me, is one of the things that's like, why do we keep buying this stuff? That, like, I would rather have broccoli all year long than green beans all year long.
It's funny, Tom, because mine is tomato out of season.
Tomato out of season. There you go. Breakfast in bed. What are you going to make for Kathy, chef? We're going to find that out later in the show. Amy has worked very hard. Amy, our producer, has worked very hard yesterday baking all sorts of box cake mixes to find out which one is the best, and at the same time, which one it costs the most. It's overrated. So we have cake mixes, a box that goes from $1.49 for the cake mix all the way up to $25 for a box mix. And we're going to find out if it's worth it. That's what we love to do here, is we like to take the taste challenge and marry it up with a price and see, would you pay it? Would you buy it again? Puddin' on the Ritz. Chef Brittany Bartleben is going to be talking about Budino and these delicious, intense puddings. Is that a French thing too, Terry, or are the French puddings more lightly based?
Boudin is French. Budino is Italian.
So same thing.
Yeah, same thing. Same thing. It's a rolled.
But I think of Budino being very intense and very kind of stiff and reduced, and it's like it's a real pudding.
Correct. It's a word that's taken on boudin, which is the actual word for blood sausage in France.
Uh-huh. So it's dark and rich and, yeah, okay.
Correct.
Now I get
very
it.
Rich and intense. Right.
And, of course, we're going to wrap up the show today with our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. I think we're going to, both of us, we're going to gang up on Brittany Barton-Laban, if I'm not mistaken. Because she is the egomaniac when it comes to our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. She comes in swinging every week thinking she's going to take us down.
And so, she does.
And she does, exactly. And she does. All right, let's talk about our Taste of the Week here on the Hot Stove Show. I'm going to jump in with more of a technique, and I love this technique. And I don't know how to explain it other than I eat this dish. When I eat it out, I tend to eat it down a Thai tongue. And it's like a salt and pepper pork chop. And if you go to the grocery store, you'll see pork chops, right? And they are under the plastic wrap, right? And they are cut in different thicknesses. So these pork chops are thin cut, maybe a half inch max, probably more like 3/8, quarter inch thick pork chops. And then you whack them up bone in with a cleaver, and you dredge them in cornstarch, and you deep fry them. And then once you pull them out of the fryer, they're all cooked and 100% cooked through. Now I have my wok ready with some peanut oil or something like that. I throw in my chopped garlic and my chopped jalapenos and my fried bits of pork chop that I have. And I stir fry that all the way up with some salt. And now I have my salt and pepper pork chops. And I love them. They're just like I'd rather eat them than a cupcake. They're just like a snack that I just love chewing on. How about you, Chef? What's your taste of the week?
I'm going to go with what I just had for breakfast this morning, which was so delicious. I made yesterday something that looked like almost like a cut between a chopino and a Manhattan clam chowder kind of idea, but I didn't use any clam. I lost the name of that fish, a white fish that I had in my freezer. I thawed that out, used that, potatoes, sauteed onion, sauteed garlic, thyme, oregano, potatoes, small cube potato diced, San Marzano tomato, put the whole thing together, a little bit of bell pepper as well, and sweat the whole thing down, a little bit of white wine, lemon juice and lime, mm-hmm. Cook that down slowly, and then I put all my white fish in there at the end, at the last minute, and make that with some rice yesterday. This morning, I took some of the leftover rice, some of the leftover chowder kind of
stew,
idea.
Yeah.
Toss that, I crispied the rice, put the chowder right on top of that, and then I cracked an egg right on top of that and mixed the whole thing together. Oh, man, that was a delicious breakfast.
I feel like you're starting to cook like me a little bit, Chef. That's so unlike you.
I'm hearing your voice when I open the fridge.
Yeah. Chef Terry, let's make hash.
something that says, throw it together.
Throw it together. It's okay. That is very funny. It is definitely more my style. My wife hates it. I'll just admit to that. Whenever I say I'm making breakfast and she knows that I'm making it out of leftovers, she says, I think I'll skip. I'm going to go work out. She'll just come up with some reason.
It's funny. My wife does exactly the same thing.
Amy's going to join us in the next segment. Our producer talked about passing it down. Don't let the recipe box die with you. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society show. Stay with us, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we are coming to you live on Facebook right now. We rejoined this civil world by actually going live on Facebook while we tape our show. So if you ever want to join us, just go to live on Facebook on Friday mornings from 9 to 11. We're going to try and be consistent and get this thing up and running like we used to. Right, Sean? Our producer, has been working hard on this. Or our tech engineer, I'll call you. What is your official title, Sean?
You know, it's kind of a new thing because the whole streaming thing is kind of a new path. So,
a new streamer. We're going to call you a new streamer. Amy, tell us about the pass it down. So we have a little theory here at the show and at the Hot Stove that a recipe doesn't just live and die by its ingredients and its instructions. It has a history, typically a family history, a celebratory history, an ownership. Maybe you put your own little bits and bobs on it to make it your own. You own this dish, but Grandma started it. Tell us about somebody who joined went on our Facebook and told us about their family recipe.
M reached out with his entry on crab lasagna. Bill's father was raised in the Midwest, very traditional, meat and potatoes. Bill's family gathered on Christmas Eve for their holiday celebrations. They served big prime roast, all the perfect sides. But along the way, his mom added a crab lasagna to the meal. And here is the recipe. 1 pound of crab, 2 cans of cream of shrimp soup, cottage cheese, cream cheese, onion, basil, Beaumont spice, and that's a mix of salt, onion powder, and celery powder. Then it's layered with noodles, soup, cheeses, topped with tomatoes, and cheddar cheese. I reached out and asked a couple more questions about the soup. So the note is the original recipe called for Cross and Blackwell shrimp soup, but now they don't make it. Campbell's soup did not cut it, so now they use Bar Harbor's lobster and crab bisque, and then they doctor it up with some shrimp stock. The family loved it. It was a staple for years, but the crab lasagna has seemed to skip a generation. This next generation doesn't like it. So, Tom, Thierry, Bill's question to you both, is this too rich? Do you have suggestions to improve it?
And he doesn't say why the next generation doesn't like it. Is it like sometimes how, like, green beans with cream and mushroom soup and crispy onions on top doesn't make it to the current Thanksgiving table, right? You know, that was... Is it a snooty issue or a taste issue?
I'm not sure. It could be either one.
I think it could be. I think it could be a combination of both, Tom. I think the flavor. I mean, personally, I've never had a cream of shrimp soup in a can. I've never had that, so I don't know what that flavor is. But if I had to choose, I probably would make. If they're going to make their own shrimp stock, you're really close to make your own cream of shrimp. I would make that from scratch, you know, using some good shrimp from the, you know, go buy some good shrimp. Then you leave enough shrimp on the side. Then you can add to the crab mixture into your lasagna, which would, you know, that would just be an extra flavor.
So you just start with a bechamel and make soup out of it? Is that what you're saying, Chef?
Yeah, almost like a chowder idea where you would, instead of using, and then they're using cottage cheese and cream cheese, I would probably just simply use some creme fraiche, you know, nice little sour kind of cream to put in there and simplify the whole thing by having a flavor probably for younger generation that's a little bit more recognizable. You know, just, I don't know, just that would be my take on it. And the rest is onion, basil, crab. I mean, it's all good stuff. You can make that really delicious, layered some nice noodles. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about the tomato, especially if it's Christmas time. I know we're going to talk about this a little bit, you know, a little bit later, but tomato at Christmas time, usually around here, is very hard to find good tomato unless you're using canned tomato.
So, Amy, did you get the feeling like they were just using a tomato sauce, like a typical lasagna where there'd be tomato sauce, or were there actually fresh sliced tomatoes in it?
It's topped with sliced tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would get rid of those ASAP.
What about adding some acid or some fresh herbs or something? Does that brighten it up?
Well, here's the thing. It's a family recipe, right? So when what's his name, Bill? Is that when Bill makes it, he's remembering all the good feelings that he had when his grandmother made it, or his mother. I'm not sure which one it was, but I think his mother. And so he's remembering all of those kind of flavors and that history that that brings. So you can't just jump in the middle of this thing, right? Sure. You kind of have to let it come out, in my opinion. You kind of have to let it come out in a somewhat typical way that it would always came out, so that he has some connection to the recipe. So
I agree with that.
Yeah. So for me, I would get rid of the sliced tomatoes on top and just do a little tomato sauce, even if it's a canned tomato sauce. I would just go ahead and replace those with tomato sauce. Lasagna is very well known to have tomato sauce in it. As far as the shrimp soup that he can't find anymore, I would do what Chef Terry said, which is make a bechamel or some sort of chowder base. No potatoes, none of that. I wouldn't even probably make the chowder base, Chef. Sorry about that. Just because chowder generally has, you know, carrots and onions and, you know, I would just make a bechamel. But instead of using, you know, make it thick and then thin it with my shrimp stock. And then I would take whole prawns and I would slice them in half and layer a prawn layer on my bechamel so that you had a recognizable shrimp when somebody's eating that. I think the worst thing you can have in any sort of meal, it's like what you think of when you're flying on an airplane. It's like, you look down at your dish and you think, I have no idea what's on my plate. And I think that's hard, especially for youngsters that are more picky eaters, right? They don't have the history with this dish that he does. Mm-hmm. He knows what's in it. He made it. But the youngsters are just kind of picking at it going, there's a lot going on here and I don't know what it is. And so it's scary. So that's what I would do. I would just, you know, make everything, every layer delicious and use real shrimp and real crab, obviously, and let it be, let it jump out at you. Let it be a fun, lovely celebration of our local seafood.
Nice.
I mean, to me, I think it can come out to be a delicious, very much a delicious up-to-date dish. I think it just needs to be updated a little bit so the kids can actually eat it too. And I think you will get a lot of satisfaction of having the next generation picking it up and, you know, feeling like it's a family heirloom.
Yeah. I would definitely get rid of the cottage cheese. Cottage cheese,
yeah, me too.
As if you've listened to this show for any length of time, cottage cheese really doesn't belong on the table of in any way of any sort, in my opinion. And so it certainly doesn't belong when you cut into a piece of lasagna and you have all those funky curds jumping out at you. It's like super gross, and I think you got to get rid of the cheese, personally. And if you want to make something cheesy in the chowder base or the bechamel that you're baking, make it a mornay, right? Stir in, Chef Terry, would you just stir in some Gruyere or something, Comté, into your bechamel, right?
I probably would do Comté slightly on the strength of the Gruyere, just because you're dealing with seafood. You don't want to overpower the whole thing. But yeah, Comté would be perfect. It melts well. It's a good cheese to have. It's not too strong. It would be perfect.
Yeah. And so when you cut it open, you'll get a little bit of that beautiful stringiness that melted cheese gives you.
Yeah.
And I just, for the record, want to put out there, because we've had this argument over the 20 years between my wife, between Chef Terry and I, we've had this argument a few times. Chef Terry, often considered the best chef in Seattle, as just said, put some cheese with your seafood. Thank you very much. I've been saying that for a long time on clam pizza. I've been saying it on shrimp scampi with linguine. I've been saying it for a long time, and I get shouted down every time. And today,
Tom,
on this very show, at this very moment, Chef Terry has said it is okay to put a little Comté in your lasagna with your shrimp.
Hold on 1 second. It's okay for Bill because that's his heirloom.
Oh,
it's his family heirloom.
Oh, I see.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, okay.
I think it's okay for Bill to use the cheese. I'm just recommending a different cheese than cottage cheese, obviously. I am not a big fan either. So, yes, use Comté instead. Me, if I'm making this dish, I'm not putting that in.
Well, yeah, you just ruined it now. You've just torn apart his family history. Oh. You should be proud of yourself right now.
I made it my family.
All right, coming up next. What do we go overboard on in our kitchens, especially on a year-round basis? I mean, there's some things that people just can't leave to the season, right? They have to have asparagus all year long, when really it's a 6 to 8 week season right here in Washington. And if you were to eat it during those 8 weeks and then skip it the rest, you really want it when it comes back, right? You really enjoy it when it comes back. So overboard and overrated is our next segment on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we have a bit longer with you today, almost an hour and a half more to go. So stay with us all day. We appreciate it. We hope you're in your kitchen, canning something up, larding your freezer. Man, I went through my freezer the other day. I have so much stuff, so much variety. You know, sometimes you make a batch of something and it's okay, on your 10th one, you're like, I can't believe I made this much brisket chili or whatever it was. I have so much variety in my freezer right now. I have 20 different homemade things in my freezer right now. It is fantastic. Wow. The last one being,
good for you.
I had bought a duck in Chinatown at the barbecue window, and we ate all the duck, and then I took some of my chicken stock out of the freezer, and I made duck stock with those kind of star anise duck bones that you get from a Chinese roasted duck. Oh,
yeah.
So good. It's going to make such good soup when we get around to something like that.
Ooh, duck soup with shiitake mushroom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm in.
Now we're talking. Okay, Chef, last week we talked about a few ingredients that didn't get their due respect in the kitchen. You came up with turnips. I came up with parsnips, both being kind of a wintertime vegetable, I would say. What vegetable is overrated? Which one gets a little too much respect? Which one are people just unwilling to set aside their wants and desires and wait for them to be at a much better state when they're actually in season. Do you have one that's on the top of your head?
I have a couple of things that are pet peeve of mine, and I think the biggest one to me is caprese salad. You see a caprese in January in Chicago. I mean, on the menu in a restaurant, you're like, come on, man. It's like, let's bake something. Let's do something different.
Yeah, it makes you crazy.
You can't have a caprese, my most beautiful caprese in my life, I've had in Taormina, Sicily. And obviously, I was right where it belongs. It was beautiful. But the tomato was room temp. It was perfectly ripe. The cheese was room temp. The basil was fantastic. Everything was as it's supposed to be at its premium. There's nothing premium in January in Seattle or Chicago to have a sliced tomato raw. I mean, that's like there is no good tomatoes around, period. Wait till the season comes around and enjoy the greatness of what a tomato can be like at its best. But in January, I think it's at its worst. So forget about those tomatoes. To change it, just use something else. Or use a canned tomato. You know, a Marzano tomato, San Marzano tomato whole, in a can. I've used plenty of them. I have 4 cans in my basement right now. I use them in the wintertime to make stews or whatever. It obviously wouldn't be a caprese salad, but you could bake the mozzarella. You could do a caprese tomato, a tomato and mozzarella baked, you know, or you could lightly smoke your mozzarella, give it another layer of flavor. You just don't have to use it raw, man. That's just, it's so disappointing when you bite into that cold tomato, unripe, untomato-like, and the basil that has very weak flavor. It's can't just forget about it. And the next thing is garlic. I love garlic. I love garlic when it's necessary. But to put it everywhere, forget about it, Tony. I don't know. For some reason, some people feel like they have to put garlic in everything. And I'm totally not for it. You know, to me, garlic is a very beautiful princess in the kitchen. Use it when it's necessary, but not everywhere. It doesn't belong everywhere.
When it's necessary, and also in an appropriate quantity. People got off when Emeril, our pal Emeril, would go on his show and just say, you know, basically, bam, if some garlic is good, more garlic must be better. If some pepper is good, more pepper must be better. That is just not the case. I love Emeril to death, but that was a bad thing that he did to American cooking in that some was never enough. More was better. And that's right. Just so I'm in agreement with you there, Chef. I have a weird one. I have two. One is like a vegetable that people insist on eating year-round, like asparagus, you know, green beans. They're pretty and everything, but they just don't have any flavor. You know, it's right. You've really got to get them out of the garden generally or from a farm stand for them to have much flavor. The other one, in Prosser last week when I was over to the farm, I went and picked up our half a steer that we had. Our neighbor, we bought a half of the neighbor's cow. He had 2 cows, and he sold them in 4 halves. And so I went and picked up the steer from the shop in Sunnyside that actually broke it down for us, right? It's not something I can sell in the restaurants or anything like that because it's not USDA. Right, right. So anyway, as I'm picking it up, I have all these boxes of meat, about, 400 pounds of meat or something like that. And I clean the chest freezer out, all ready for it. But then I've got all this ground beef. And I was thinking, it's like, you know, ground beef is such an institutional product these days that, and people eat it all the time. And I think to myself, I never do. I just don't. I mean, you might find me once a year, once every 2 years, you know, making a batch of meatballs or something like that out of ground beef. But generally, burgers, things like that, I just don't eat them. And it struck me of how ubiquitous ground beef is and how often people make it in, like what ways? I mean, it's like I just have no interest in even dealing with it. And of course, here I am with 400 pounds of beef in my car, 200 pounds of which is ground beef. So I am going to be seriously challenged in my trips to the farm to figure out what to do with it. The first thing we did was make sloppy joes. I haven't made Jackie made it, but a sloppy joe. I was just going to make like a barbecue beef sandwich, ground beef with barbecue sauce cooked down on a toasted bun. She wanted to make sloppy joes, and she followed recipes online. She had no interest in anything I had to say about it. And, you know, nothing new there. So I'd be curious if you think that their ground beef can show up. I know burgers. I'm just not a burger guy, so I know that. But if you have a place, one of you, our trusty listeners, have a place where ground beef just is a standout. It's not just a stand-in, but it's a standout in a dish, right? If you have something like that, I want to hear about it. Go to our Facebook page, tell Amy, and then we'll put it on a segment here on the show. Go ahead, Terry.
There is a very famous dish in France called hachis parmentier, which is mashed potato, ground beef, mashed potato, ground beef, mashed potato, breadcrumb, baked in the oven, and serve as is, super hot.
Like a shepherd's pie.
Kind of ideal, except no crust, just baked.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, you know, when we went to school during lunchtime, once every other week, that was the dish as a main course of our three-course lunch. And that was such a treat because I just thought that was such a beautiful thing. Mashed potato and ground beef. How bad can it get? Mm-hmm. Oh, sliced onion, caramelized onion. How bad can it get? I mean, it's delicious.
Well, you're right. And I guess I should think about it. That's why I'm asking people to give me some ideas about how to use up 200 pounds of ground beef that I have in my freezer at the farm because I bought the steer across the street that we watched grow up from a calf all the way to it's one bad day.
And make a ground beef, tomato, onion, garlic, beautiful stew, and then can it. Put it in jar.
No, I'm not doing that, Chef. I'm not canning my ground beef. It's already frozen in my... Well, I did. I gave 10 pounds to my sister-in-law. I gave 10 pounds to the housekeeper.
So you get 350 pounds left.
It's just, struck me that here I am. I'm just not the biggest ground beef fan. And I love ground pork. I mean, I make sausages all the time. I love it.
We make a beef sausage.
No, I'm not going to. No, it's not. It sounds terrible.
Why?
When was the last beef sausage that you had other than a hot dog?
Can't remember, actually.
Yeah, exactly. There's a reason for that.
But you could make a good one.
No, I can't. I don't know why that is. Why don't you see more beef sausage? You just never see it. You see lamb sausages, like merguez, or you see chorizo, which is pork, generally. I guess the Mexicans make a beef chorizo, would be my mm-hmm. guess. Yeah. Those are that's
stuff.
My idea of green beans. Just get rid of them. Wait for July. Enjoy them all the way through October. They're very prolific. They'll grow nicely. But in the wintertime, eat dried beans. You know, grow your own dried beans, too. That's super fun. Jackie grew hundreds of pounds of dried beans. And then as she watches her Netflix shows in the off-season of the farm, she just shucks beans. And it's like her hands are just totally busy the entire time shucking beans. Amy, what's our Facebook page?
Hot Stove Radio. Yeah, you can also email us at hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com.
It's time for breakfast in bed when we come back on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society on Cairo Radio. We're coming to you from downtown Seattle. Happy to be here. Chef in the Chapeau, you're over there in Madison Valley in your home office, huh?
That is correct, and it's not snowing, so great. And we're loving this.
It will be soon. We're already getting our Valentine cancellations, which is super sad.
You're taking cancellation, Tom?
We are customer-oriented, Chef. We would like people to be happy. So we're hopefully that they'll just let us credit them for a future event, but we'll see. We'll see what's going on. Chef Amy, as they're watching, I will be, or as they're listening on Sunday, I will be teaching a class here at the Hot Stove with Jackie.
You will be.
Live. Is there any way for people to kind of get in last minute on that, even if they don't have one of the boxes?
Sure, just send us an email.
Okay. Celebrate Valentine's with us. Chef, Kathy, since you've gotten your pneumonia, Kathy has been, like, all she does all day is run around trying to take care of you. And so I feel like you owe her a super Valentine's breakfast in bed. Let her lay down for a while and have you wait on her. What is it that you're going to make for Kathy? What would make it dreamy for her to kind of lay in bed, have a little maybe cafe latte, have a little fresh squeezed blood orange juice, a little champagne? What is it going to be for you, Chef?
Well, I know that the way we work is first thing first. a nice...
Whoa, chef, this is a family show.
Yes, it is. First thing first is coffee. You know, nice nice coffee in the morning with some warm madeleine, because I've been in the room of making madeleine, and we're giving madeleine to the guests who have bought the Valentine's box that we have made at Luc. So I will have madeleine. So I think a little warm madeleine with a hot coffee in the morning in bed is a nice little treat. And we're not a very big fan of like eating in bed, like big breakfast in bed, because that's a little bit cumbersome and eh. But the first half hour is just waking up slowly with a cup of coffee and some warm madeleine. I think that puts a nice mood to the day.
Does she have a favorite thing to activity in the morning? Does she like you to bring her the newspaper and the crossword puzzle and a sharp number two pencil?
It's exactly what it is. The New York Times, usually the Sunday New York Times, which we get every week. And, you know, just start with that. And it's a nice, there's a big pile to read there. So,
yeah,
it's a nice pastime.
That's like a 50 cup newspaper right there. 50 cup of coffee newspaper by the time you get through
especially,
that.
It's great. Valentine's Day is on a Sunday, so we'll have both. So Sunday, New York time, little conversation, and then I'll make breakfast. And for breakfast, something quite simple, but she loves that. A nice scramble of nice scrambled egg with sauteed mushroom, caramelized onion, a little goat cheese, the whole thing made into a scrambled egg, and some nice sourdough toast. Sourdough as in sourdough bread. And sliced bacon. Just tender, not burn crispy. So there's still a little chew on the bacon. And that, and a little flour in the vase, put on the tray, and then serve that to her. And I think that will be a nice little glass of rosé bubble on the side, because by then you're ready for that. And I think that's extremely amourish, as they say, and show her my love.
There you go. That's a very sweet Valentine. I would, if Kathy doesn't want to lay in bed and have you wait on her, then I'll lay in your bed and you can bring me a little something something. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a different conversation to be had.
You betcha.
But I would do it. I would do it for you, Tom. No problem.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I know you would. And vice versa, Chef.
And Thierry, really quick before we go over to Tom. If anyone has not seen your Instagram, the Chef in the Hat or Chef in the Hat, you posted a photo of you and Kathy from, I don't know, a few years ago.
Oh, that was my marketing person.
You have to check it out. It's amazing. Your eyebrows.
Well, I'm like Brezhnev. I'm very known for my eyebrows.
They're amazing. Check out that photo. It's amazing.
And you just go to Instagram and you can find it, huh?
Chef in the Hat.
All right.
It's a treat.
I have a photo of the chef that I'm very fond of, which is him completely naked, standing behind a Vitamix blender that he sold his soul to do for, what, Food Art Magazine or one of those? It was in a lot of
Food
Arts Magazine, yeah. So it was nothing but chef and the blender.
I still have that poster, Tom. It's right behind me, actually. It's not, you can't see it, but
years ago,
it's in the other room.
I had that poster blown up into a 2x3. And I,
2x4,
I,
yeah.
I went to Bartels and I bought some cheap little rings, like earrings and other places where you might put a piercing. And I put it all together and took it and hung it in his kitchen for him so that his whole staff could see him in life-size form. And so
that was fun.
The only comments I got was he needs a body hair razor. That's the only comments that I got.
Yeah,
Keep the eyebrows. Jackie loves waffles. And I think that is when you get something that takes too much sawing in the bed, like a knife and fork, like sometimes my French toast gets very tough because it's made with baguette or rustic bread and the crust can get tough. So it doesn't really work. She loves our French toast, but it doesn't really work. She needs something more tender like a waffle or pancakes, and she loves both. And so a little short stack of pancakes. She's just the opposite. She likes her bacon a bit crispy. And then on her pancakes, and I don't get this. I never have, but she's always loved it. A fried egg on top of her pancakes.
Oh, yeah. No, I do that too.
You do that too, huh?
Yeah.
What is, I don't get it. So just tell me why. I mean, well, you could have it on the side, right? Easily on the side. What does it do for, like, all that runny yolk do in your pancakes?
It goes into the pancake, which makes the pancake, like, it's kind of like the burger idea with the buns. And the kind of like you go buy an egg sandwich, it's the same kind of concept, except this runs into the pancake and makes the pancake really, I mean, the pancake in itself.
It's got eggs in it flavor. Already, chef.
I know, but pancake in itself has some flavor, but if you add an egg to it, it now has a different flavor. It's a very added flavor, I think, and it's delicious.
No, yeah, I get that part. I just don't get the whole on top thing, so I find it a bit odd, but she loves it, so I would make it for her. And then real maple syrup. She insists on warm. Like, we always put a little cup of maple syrup in a warm water bath to get it heated up. Yeah. You don't ever want to put cold maple syrup on your pancakes. That is That's a no-no. Right. And, of course, she loves a mimosa, but only with blood orange juice. She doesn't. Nice. She doesn't like it with just orange juice. She likes blood orange juice in her mimosa. So those are the things that I would put on a tray and walk into her. Thanks for the idea of putting a little bud vase on there, Chef. I probably would have forgotten that.
You know what? I must say, it's something that I'm realizing more and more. This is not a very American men tradition to think flower. Many men don't think about flowers. Flowers are very special for your loved one. Maybe whether you're a man or woman, it doesn't matter. Everybody loves to get flowers. I'm sure you would love to get some flower, Tom. I
mean, they're just dead weeds. They're all cut. They don't last very long. No, I'm just kidding. I get her flowers all the time.
Try to buy them a week before.
You know, one of the great things about, she's a gardener, right? So one of the great things about our house is that she has something flowering all year long. And so you can always just run out to the yard and pop a little something into the bud vase.
You know, if you take a big branch of rosemary and put a rose in front of it and a little something else from the garden that's still in the garden right now, you'll have a nice little handmade, beautiful, and the touch is absolutely fantastic.
All right. We're going to go into hour number two. Jerry Andrews is going to be here with the XOBC wine, Puddin' on the Wrist with Brittany Bartleben. Of course, we're going to have Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia. Don't leave us. We'll miss you too much. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we are your weekly co-host, cohorts in your kitchen. We love to talk to you when you're cooking dinner or when you're in your garden or driving down the freeway, heading off to a restaurant. You know, it's 25% open now in restaurants. I've been heading out and checking out who's open and how they're doing. There's a lot of activity out there. I was surprised how quickly it turned back on. In this hour, we're going to talk to Jerry Andrews and Amy, the co-founder of XOBC Cellars, and their project with Brandi Carlile and raising money for the Looking Out Foundation and all the different things. We're going to have a two-part segment with them and cover a couple of different topics. So one is, you know, Terry, you and I are big Food Lifeline people. It's like, how do you create some of your own self-funding instead of having to go out and fundraise all the time? So I know Fair Start does a good job with that, and so I'm going to see what XOBC does about that. Hi, ladies.
Welcome to the show.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Thierry. Thank you so much for having us. Great to be here.
Absolutely. You're coming to us from the wine center of Washington, the Walla Walla Valley.
That's right.
It is exciting to have you here. Tell us about this project, XOBC, and what your plans are for it, and tell us about the wine itself.
Yeah, you bet. So, look, we've been excited about continuing to contribute to the Looking Out Foundation in a variety of ways. And Tom, you know the work that we've done with the Looking Out Foundation historically. Brandi is, as you know, a huge activist, and the Looking Out Foundation is an organization that she founded many years ago. And she wanted to make music mean more and was very focused on supporting underprivileged women and children in a variety of ways. And we can talk about some of those things here shortly. But as we joined the board and started to do more work with her, we really wanted to find a way to take our passion and continue to build an avenue by which we could support the Looking Out Foundation. And that was through wine. So having gotten to know the wine industry out in Walla Walla over the last decade quite well, and understanding Brandi and Catherine's passion and our philanthropic kind of angle, we really wanted to create a fantastic family of wines from the Walla Walla Valley that were representative of the terroir here, that allowed us to create a really cool membership and a collective of folks that wanted to give back as well and also drink fantastic wine. So we have a family of wines named after Brandy's family. So we have a Rosé, a Grenache, a Syrah, and a Cabernet. And we've been excited to grow the business over the last 2 years now. And we have a lot of things up our sleeve that will be fun with Brandy and the rest of the team.
It's so exciting. It's a beautiful bottle, beautiful package. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the self-funding mechanism that that this kind of works towards for the Looking Out Foundation. Let's stick to the wine here for the few minutes that we have. In front of me, you've dropped off, you know, not many people, usually when a wine company comes and drops off a sample at the show, they drop off a bottle. Jerry and Amy dropped off a case of wine, Terry, so we'll have to drop some of these by your house.
Well, hey, we knew it was for the two of you, so we wanted to make sure you had an ample supply.
So
yeah,
I've
thank
been
you si- very much. They knew their customer there, I can tell.
Exactly. I've been sipping on the Catherine, Brandy's lovely wife, named after Brandy's lovely wife, Catherine, the 100% Syrah. When you talk about the terroir of the Walla Walla Valley, you guys, what do you think? What is it presenting that's special to you?
Well, I mean, I think so many things, right? But for us, so we're really connected to the rocks. We love the terroir in the rocks specifically because it represents this like deep adversity, right? Which may sound a little cliche, but you know, in fact, the way that the terroir works is you've got these big rocks that are, you know, significantly deeper than you would actually think, that the vines have to work through to ultimately get to the water, and through their dedication and striving to get to that water, you get these just amazing, this amazing fruit that has a really earthy tone to it. So if you guys are drinking it, I'd love to hear your thoughts about it. But really what we're trying to do is make that connection between this unique flavor profile and the adversity of the soil, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. It also, I think, represents a little bit of the struggle of life. You know, rocks represent struggle, but then also when they're polished, they represent beauty of you struggle, but then you succeed, and it looks beautiful.
That's right.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I always think of like the Champagne area of having like a lot of rock, a lot of maybe some Burgundy, but mostly I always picture it in Champagne. The you have a sparkling here, which is super popular amongst friends of mine. Chef Terry in particular loves the sparkling, as does my wife.
Oh yeah.
Tell us about that. It's a 80% Syrah, 20% Grenache.
Yeah, Amy, do you want to talk about the sparkling?
Yeah, our Exo sparkling was actually a really fun project that was born out of a partnership that we created with Live Nation, and that particular wine is actually going to be in Live Nation venues when we're able to return to venue. What we found is that all of our wines that we crafted there that we've been chatting about so far are only available as part of a online membership-based wine club. It has been so beautiful to see this wine club grow into, you know, we affectionately call it the community of collectors, and the support and activism we have just from our robust community of collectors is beautifully overwhelming. And we also found that there were people outside of the community of collectors that wanted to really be able to partake in something special and to celebrate special occasions. And we said, well, let's give the people what they want. And so we crafted this Exo Sparkling Rosé in response to that. So that's the one wine that's available outside the community of collectors. You know, as you know, and as we're going to discuss later, all of our, you know, proceeds benefit the Looking Out Foundation. And so really, you know, we say that raising a glass can make a difference too. And we found that, you know, some people are just red wine drinkers. Some people love rosé. Some people just love sparkling. So it's really nice to have that optionality and to think about, you know, celebrating a special occasion by raising a glass of our XO sparkling rosé. We find that it also works around a campfire too, celebrating every day. You know, it's a really great price point. So we're really excited about what we've been able to craft with that XO.
All right, we have about 20 seconds.
You guys before, know our wine.
Hold on one second. Just we're going to get into a little bit more, but we only have about 20 seconds to tell people where they can find this wine right now.
XOBCCellars.com.
And so no real retailers here in Seattle?
You know, we actually do have a partnership with Terrabella Flowers, and we love the folks over there. They're doing amazing things. And you can order our XO Sparkling Rosé through them as well. And it can come with or without flowers, and they'll deliver it right to your doorstep.
Ah, what a lovely thing. In case you forgot it was Valentine's Day, you can make up for it next week with champagne and flowers. Sparkling
That's
wine
right.
and flowers.
You bet.
All right, we're going to talk more with Jerry and Amy next week about the Looking Out Foundation and funding vehicles from within on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society show up next. Brittany Bartleben is going to join us, the long-lost chef, pastry chef from the Metropolitan Markets and formerly of Dahlia Bakery on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society show. I'm happy to be here from downtown Seattle. And Chef in the Chapeau is joining me over Zoom from where, Chef?
Live in Madison Valley.
Live in Madison Valley. That's glad you are alive. Still making sure you don't get that COVID after your bout of pneumonia.
That's right.
Look who's joined us, Chef.
Hello.
Long-lost friend, Brittany Bartleben.
Brittany.
And apparently I introduced you wrong earlier in the show, which you're very upset about.
I'm so mad.
So maybe you want to correct us with your proper title.
I am the production manager at Metropolitan Markets. I have a pastry chef on my team, and I wouldn't want him to feel usurped.
Well,
should he?
Do they know what a fabulous baker you are? Why aren't you the pastry chef?
I'm above the pastry chef.
I'm above.
I don't think he heard that correctly. She's above it, Tom.
Okay, I got it. Never mind. Sorry, I didn't know there was.
Love
anything.
You, Jens, if you're listening.
I honestly didn't know there was anything above a pastry chef. I thought they were the divas of our business.
Oh, he is.
Anyway. Let's talk Budino.
I
was asking Terry earlier, is Budino and Boudin, like the French version, mm-hmm. the same thing? And is it, I mean, I grew up with like pudding. Jell-O pudding, right?
Right, yeah.
And so it's soft and flimsy mm-hmm. and overly sweet and
right.
blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Budino, I always think when we've made it, when you guys have made it in the restaurants, it's always just thick, almost like paste a lot of times, kind of pudding. So
yeah.
Terry said, what'd you say, Terry, that it's the
so
same,
Budino,
right?
Budino is the Italian word. Boudin is the French word. Boudin in French is based on a blood sausage.
The word is. Not the,
word
not
is,
the pudding.
Yes. No. It's based on the blood sausage. So the name Boudin comes from the blood sausage, which translated into pastry in originally with like a very thick chocolate ganache kind of idea. Mm-hmm. You know, you can wrap it up in mango slices or whatever, but all kind of different wrap. But in general, it comes from the word boudin or the word budino in Italian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In Italian, budino is basically just pudding.
Right.
It's just a...
Right.
Yeah. Not American pudding. They're two very, very different beasts. I mean, they both have their place, mm-hmm. in my opinion, as you probably know this about me. But budino is really luxurious. It is thicker. I don't know if I'd call it pastier, but it's more the texture of a creme brulee.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, what we used to do a lot with the chocolate budino served at Sirius Pie is we'd use it as a chocolate cream pie filling because it sets that well. What's great about it is there's no gelatin in it. It's thickened simply with egg yolks and chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate will bind once it cools. It'll set the pudding. And we would just drizzle it, as you know, with a little good olive oil and a sprinkle of flaky salt. And that's all it really needs. It's so good.
It's delicious.
So good. Yeah. I mean, it's to this day one of my favorite desserts.
And you always serve that with some sort of cookie or biscotti.
Yeah,
or
biscotti
something like,
yeah. or, yeah, it doesn't need much. Just something not too sweet, something light and crisp that you can sort of use to spoon it up with. And it's
so how do you make it?
So
let's
you're,
start from the beginning.
Let's start from the beginning. For a chocolate budino, you're basically making a creme anglaise. And so that would be the same thing as ice cream base or a custard sauce. You're heating your cream or milk and then tempering in sugar and egg yolks and returning it to the stove and cooking it until the eggs hit 170 degrees. That's the temperature you need for eggs to set.
Mm-hmm. Not over that, right?
Not over that, or you're going to have scrambled eggs.
Right.
An omelet.
Yes. And then you pour that slowly over your chocolate, whatever chocolate you want to use. Milk chocolate. We always like a nice 70% dark chocolate. And then stir that kind of what we call ganache style. And so that's, you're going to add a little bit at a time. If you try and add all that to your chopped chocolate, it's just going to, it's going to be tough. It's,
and your chocolate isn't sitting over a hot water bath or anything like that.
No, we would just, you can do that. You can certainly do that. You can melt your chocolate down first. That's a great first step to do. We often wouldn't do that, just to save time. Sometimes while I was heating my cream, the pot I was using, I would set my bowl of chocolate over that while it was heating to sort of get that chocolate going.
A little shortcut.
Little industry tip there. Mm-hmm. And then you just slowly whisk your chocolate until it's fully melted. Strain it through a chinois or a fine sieve just to catch any gobbledygook that got in there. And then let it chill. And it's set to a beautiful creme brulee-like consistency. We at Metropolitan Markets have just launched three new Budino flavors. We've got a classic chocolate, 70% chocolate. We add a little rum to it. We've got a legit butterscotch Budino, and I'll go back to why I call it legit. And then we have a really nice passion fruit Budino, and they come in these beautiful little vintage jars that you, of course, get to take home with you and keep forever. And they're a perfect little 4-ounce serving, perfect for Valentine's Day. You could get all three and, you know, they have a long shelf life too. So
when you, let's go back to the chinois, you've run it through a chinois. Mm-hmm. So that's a fine strainer. So I just want to make sure people know that if you curdle a little bit, if you get it just a little bit over your temperature and you start to notice some lumps, it's still okay to run it through the chinois.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If it's completely scrambled eggs, you're done.
You're done.
But if you got a little bit, then just that's what the chinois is for.
That's
what the fine strainer is for.
Absolutely. It's worth it. I mean, you don't have to get a really expensive chinois, but just a fine mesh strainer will catch anything that, you know, how egg whites get a little funky when you're cooking. That happens. Another thing you can do, and you don't have to do this, but we do it, is hit it with a burr mixer or a hand blender.
That's right.
Right before you strain it. And that just sort of brings everything together and also gives it a really nice glossy look. We would do that with creams. And
Brittany, when I was a child, my mom would make crème anglaise, and if she would go slightly over and start scrambling a little bit, she would grab a bottle, an empty bottle, and she would put the crème anglaise in there and shake. That was very... For years, I was like, what is she doing? And then one day I asked, and she's like, well, you know, she's starting to overcook a little bit. So I just...
She knew what she
shake
was
it
doing.
Good. So just like a blender, she would mix it, and it would be mixed and back to normal.
Chef, would you add anything to Brittany's directions on how to make Budino in the French way?
No, I think then this is exactly how I would do. The only thing that I would do in every single one of them is add booze.
Oh, I'm we add booze fan, for sure.
I'm a big fan of flavoring with alcohol in those cases.
Me too.
So from Grand Marnier for orange all the way to a good bourbon for good bourbon flavor, like you were talking about, those would definitely be on my priority list. I would also do in the crème anglaise, I would do coffee grind. You know, you keep your coffee grind, your espresso grind, and you put them in your crème anglaise and strain that really fine, and you have a very deep coffee flavor added to your crème anglaise.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
And that would be also a nice way to do it, with a little coffee liqueur in there or coffee extract. That would be intense. I like coffee in flan or in things like this. I like that flavor.
Right, yeah.
You know, it strikes me how often, I pour over coffee every morning, and when I'm done, I just literally put my coffee grounds into my compost bin, right? It strikes me how much we talk about those spent coffee grains or grounds. They're good for a lot of different things.
Oh, you know, one thing that my mom taught me as well, again, my mom, and that was in the old days, but I still do it today. Once every 3-4 weeks, I pour the coffee grind in my sink, in the kitchen sink, to go through the drain because it helps clean up the drain.
Didn't know that either.
I was always told never to do that.
It's very grainy.
Really? Okay.
Of a texture, and it helps clean up your pipes.
Good to know. All right.
I did not know that.
I'm a little hesitant to.
Okay, so Brittany, other things. We have about a minute. So you say this is a good time to use a good olive oil.
A good olive oil for garnish. And then, use a good chocolate too.
Right, and a flake salt. Right? Don't want like a iodized salt?
No.
And you don't even want kosher salt. You want a beautiful
flaky salt. We use a Murray River salt a lot. Jacobson mm-hmm. Salt Company has a beautiful flaky salt. I mean, the crystals are actual little pyramids that are really fun to work with. I want to talk about our butterscotch in the short time we have left. That is made legitimately by caramelizing brown sugar, mm-hmm. using a good European butter, and of course, Glenlivet 12-year single malt scotch. We don't mess around.
I like good that. Scotch. That sounds good. Yeah. I would order one of those. I'm a butterscotch nut.
Oh, so it's so good. It's my favorite.
I would order one of those.
Yeah.
Okay, Brittany.
Who doesn't like that?
This is a big day because Amy, our producer Amy, has raided the grocery store for different box cake mixes, and we have one that's $1.49 mm-hmm. a box, mm-hmm. and we have another one that's $25 a box. So we're going to taste them here with your professional palate.
All right.
And Chef Terry's got some at his home to taste with his palate, and then me, I'm just a lame-o. What do I know? So we're going to decide, is it worth it to spend the extra $23.50 on the one cake mix.
That's crazy.
Right here on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. Tasting panel is making a return. Chef Brittany Bartoleben is here. Our production manager. It just doesn't sound the same.
I know.
Production manager Brittany Bartoleben is here. It sounds better, pastry
it
chef.
It really Brittany does. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I completely agree.
All right. She's a diva, and we like it. Chef Terry Rotaro, the chef in the chapeau, is on the panel today. Hi, chef.
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
Super good. And, of course, I'm here, yours truly. Amy Richardson, our producer, tell us what you've done to us today, Amy. It feels like it doesn't feel malicious. It just feels like you were curious.
Of course not. I was curious. So I love finding new products. I'm the total sucker that will buy the expensive item because it has cute packaging. So I found this adorable cake mix, the Caker. .com online, and it's a $25 cake mix. They have three different flavors. I purchased the lemon strawberry poppy seed, but it made me wonder, is a $25 cake mix worth it? So I bought two other kinds, a yellow cake mix that's $1.29 per box with its chocolate frosting for $1.59 with the frosting.
So $3, essentially.
Yeah.
And then what brand is that?
So this is Duncan Hines.
Okay, so $3 you get cake and icing.
You do.
I will say it's about half the size of the $25 one.
Well, so that is a half of the batch.
Oh, so it's the same size.
It is. So okay. I brought Thierry the other 6 inch.
Ah, there you go.
Yes.
Yeah. Thierry gets a whole cake to himself.
It's plenty.
Yeah. Yeah, the four of us have to share a cake, and Terry gets a whole cake.
Unfair. Yep.
Hi, Terry.
And he's probably, knowing Terry, he's not even going to eat it. He's too snobby.
That's not true, Tom. Yeah. I already tasted it.
Okay. All right, and so then what else you have?
Okay, so the second cake is Miss Organic Brand, it's Miss Jones Baking Company. It's organic. Uh-huh. And I went to Whole Foods to find this because I thought there would be, you know, some different varieties, and this was $5.99 for a cake mix, and the frosting, the vanilla frosting, was $5.99. Mm-hmm. And these are both organic. The vanilla frosting is made with coconut oil, so it's a vegan frosting.
Yeah, it tastes like coconut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the third one is the Caker, and it's out of New Zealand, but they have a U.S. shop, and that's your lemon strawberry poppy seed.
Okay, so what did you find when you were making these, and what did you have to add, or what didn't come with enough?
Mm-hmm.
So we have literally a $3 cake mix, including icing, a $12 cake, including icing, and the $25 one had its own glaze in it, right?
It did. Okay. It did. Okay, so up first, number one was the Duncan Hines. We went with classic yellow and the whipped chocolate frosting. Making this batter was everything kind of that I remembered as a kid. It was kind of clumpy. I added 3 eggs, water, and oil, vegetable oil, to this in a greased pan. And the bake time was exactly what they said on the box. I appreciate this brand a lot because of the frosting they gave extra, which, as you can tell by my frosting skills, I needed it to hide a bunch of the little clumps. But it was a nice texture, easy to spread, exactly like what it says on the jar. So what do you guys think of this one?
I loved
it. Chef's kiss.
It's my favorite of the three.
Yep.
It is definitely a memory childhood for me. I remember buying this kind of package cake when I was a kid going to school. You know, if we had a little bit of money, we'd have a treat. And that was one thing we would buy. There was a French brand called Van Damme. I don't even know if it was French. That's a, and I remember buying this as a child. And this is exactly what it reminds me of. It reminds me of that, you know, the when you're done eating it, you have that coating of palm oil in your mouth or something like this, you know. It, that's what you feel it's like. But the cake itself, it's fine. It tastes like some sweet sugar cake with the chocolate frosting is not, you know, there's still sugar granulated in it.
And I'm sure the ingredient list reads like a Twinkie, but it's just, this is what you, a grandma's table style cake. This is just what you grew
up with. I would also
with.
Say it's like what, when you go to buy a box mix instead of making the effort to make your own,
that's what you
expect. Kind of want something a little trashy.
Yeah.
This taste says this is trashy good, I think.
Exactly.
Okay, so the second, Miss Jones Organic. This was a vanilla cake mix. We added eggs, milk, and melted butter. I will say this batter was silky smooth. However, the bake time was a little off. We had to add another 10 minutes or so, and I had a very big problem getting it out of the pan. So I kind of had to piece it together. The frosting...
I like that the cake's a little bit sturdy.
The frosting was an issue for me, since it is with coconut oil. Had to microwave it. And as you can see, my beautiful frosting job has lots of clumps in it, so I didn't have enough to hide all of the clumps that I poorly frosted it with. And it was stuck to the pan, but
Taste, you know, the icing tastes, it's supposed to be vanilla icing, but it's like vanilla coconut icing because it does have that coconut oil flavor.
Yeah. I really liked the cake batter though. I think it tastes good.
The flavor is okay. The it dries out really fast. It dries out super, super fast. I mean, I cut one piece off and then left it on the counter, and within an hour the thing was dry, like super dry. I'm not sure. It's missing a little fat to me, I think. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what's missing in there, but...
Butter is what it's missing.
Yeah. But she put some butter, so...
Yeah, a half a cup of melted butter.
Oil.
I would change it to a cup.
Or I would change it to oil.
Or to oil. Either one.
Yeah.
Sean, for our Facebook watchers, Sean, would you put the camera down on the cakes for a second? Okay, so the next one.
Okay, so here is the Caker Lemon Strawberry Poppy Seed Cake. And I had to pull in Loretta to help me with this because I was a little nervous. The box is adorable. It comes with this adorable cake card. How cute is this? It tells you to kind of how to make it fancy. It comes with a parchment round.
I think that's interesting. It comes with a piece of parchment paper.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And here was the interesting
thing. Here's one thing. Mm-hmm. It had a reflection on the box is adorable. How did the box taste?
Well.
You didn't taste it, did you? Yeah, exactly.
So reading our instructions here, we added milk and melted butter, a quarter cup of lemon juice, lemon zest, and 1.5 cups of strawberries. So you do have to buy lemon and strawberry in addition to your $25 cake.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is over $30.
Over $30 now.
Yeah. 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 Okay, so we made the batter, and then I pulled out the parchment round, and it was maybe 9 or 10 inches, and it's saying to use an 8-inch cake pan. So it looked too big, but then I read the instructions further, and it's supposed to be a large parchment round. So it goes over the pan, and you pour the batter, and what happens is it creates its signature rippled edges. Yes. So the batter, we thought we did something wrong since it came out really thick. It was almost like a scone mixture or something. So I didn't think it was going to turn out. However, baking it, I think it worked out beautifully. And I loved having the parchment paper for me, a home cook. It came out. The ripples, I think, are adorable.
Now, the ripples are literally from the kind of bunched up parchment paper, right?
Yeah. Right.
I think it added a nice little crunchy texture at the edges. And then that has a strawberry glaze that is mixed with more lemon juice. And then those are dried strawberry decorations.
Freeze-dried strawberry.
Did they come with it?
Oh, okay, good. Those are expensive. When you go to buy those on their own, they're very expensive.
Yeah, very expensive.
Chef Bartolabin, you have many, many, many years of experience. I mean many years of experience.
Especially with cake mix.
Especially with cake mix.
That's what I cut my teeth on.
And being a mother of a young child. Mm-hmm. Anyway, can you give us a run-through on these three cakes and where you would put your money?
Duncan Hines for the win. No cake to me. No cake mix is worth $30. I understand the convenience of it. If you're going to go in $30 for a cake, go to a local bakery and spend $30 and give them your money instead of this cake. I don't think it's worth it. If you're going to take the time to bake a cake at home, spend $7 on ingredients and make it yourself. I understand the Duncan Hines, the convenience. It's affordable and it's really good. I mean, it's garbage. I mean, I'll.
Whoa.
Like I was saying, the ingredient list is not good for you. Those aren't good things to put in your body, but you know me. There's a time and a place for treating yourself to this stuff, and I think Duncan Hines is delicious.
Yeah, I think garbage is a little heavy. What's the ingredient list on the Duncan Hines?
All right.
We only have 2 minutes.
I won't have enough time. Sugar, flour, folic acid, palm shortening, fatty acids, on and on and on.
Yeah, on and on and on. Yeah, so it's, I mean, I wouldn't call it garbage, and I don't want to leave the show saying that. I would say that it's not what you would typically be able to even make at home because it's made in a lab, right?
Right,
In a scenario like that. It is what it is.
Exactly.
Chef, we only have a minute. Do you want to jump in on your professional opinion here?
Yeah, I don't think the $25 is worth it either. I mean, if you're going to spend that kind of money, I'm totally with, but first of all, it's $30+. I would go to a store, go to Dahlia Bakery and buy a cake that's going to be made from natural ingredients, all ready to go, if you want to go the easy route. The other one is, it's time for you to practice on your cake making. It's not that complicated to make those cakes. Those cakes are easy to make. Brittany can attest to that. I mean, sugar, flour, eggs, and maybe some cream or milk if you need to. But, I mean, those are very simple ingredients to gather. You have them in your house most likely. And just read a good recipe and try at it. Because once you've made a good cake yourself, you're never going to go back.
You're so proud of it. Yeah. All right. Up next, it's Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Time right here on the Hot Stove Society Show, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. We're having a good time around here, down here at the Hot Stove Society Kitchen, where we do our virtual classes. If you ever want to join us for a class, just go to hotstovesociety.com. You, too, can learn how to cook the way we cook, which is, in your own opinion, good or bad. Tasty Trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable made right there in Ballard at our Serious Takeout in Ballard. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop or online or at TomDouglas.com, or they're all over the place. We're in 5,000 different retail joints around the country, so you should be able to find them somewhere. Amy, who's going to be our winner today?
We are playing for Bill. Bill, who sent in the crab lasagna. Thank you, Bill, for doing that. And you are going to win a copy of I Love Crab Cakes, a crab cake rub, and a smoked paprika rub.
Wow, what a combo.
Yep.
Nice.
All right, so, chefs, I'm going to ask each of you 5 questions, and the loser is paying for shipping to Bill, and he lives very far away.
Where does Bill live?
No, I don't know.
Mount Vernon, probably.
Yeah, no, he's in Washington.
Okay.
Okay, Brittany.
So, just a fair warning, that's probably a $7 shipping charge, so you better bring your A game today.
All right, Britt, you are up first.
All right.
How did cupcakes get their name?
Because it's obvious it's cake in a cup. I don't know. I don't know the backstory of that.
I think that
did I nail it? Great.
Because they were originally baked in cups.
Okay, there we go.
I think you win.
Oh, my God. Is this how it's going to be?
Yep.
My girl.
Yep.
Next question is, why is it called carrot cake?
Yeah.
Okay. What is the name of the actress who popped out of a cake in the movie Singing in the Rain? Was it A, Rita Hayworth, B, Debbie Reynolds, C, Vera Allen, or D, Marilyn Monroe?
I bet Tom knows this.
Yep.
Yeah, he's waving his arm. Debbie Reynolds.
Woohoo! Okay, Weird Al Yankovic recorded a song called Lasagna that is a parody of what famous song?
I don't know.
Lasagna.
Is it Lola by the Kinks?
No. Oh. It's La Bamba.
Oh, okay, of course. I don't feel bad for not knowing that.
Lasagna.
Okay. They think in the early 1800s, the angel food cake originated in what eastern state? A, Pennsylvania, B, New York, C, New Jersey, or D, Vermont?
Vermont.
Wrong. It is Pennsylvania. All right. The cake topping streusel comes from a German word that means what? A, to crumble, B, to eat, C, cinnamon, or D, to scatter?
I'm sorry, what was the last one again?
To scatter.
To scatter. Let's go with that one.
Okay, that's right.
You get good.
All right, Britt, you have 3 out of 5.
Not a bad showing. I mean, not particularly good, but not bad.
Not my best, not terrible.
Okay, Thierry, you are up next.
Okay.
How much does the UK spend on cake every year? A, £150,000, B, £5 million, C, £1.2 billion, or D, £2.5 billion?
I'm going to go with 1.2.
Woo, you are correct.
All right, 1.2
billion. That took a lot of talent, Chef.
That's a lot of flour.
Okay, this one really is a cake, even though it masquerades under a misleading name. This cake is chocolate topping and filled with a delicious vanilla custard. What is it?
A delicious topping and a vanilla custard. Would you want to try Budino, maybe?
Boston cream pie, Chef.
Yep. Never mind. I would have not known that.
Yeah, I know. That's why I jumped in on that one.
All right. Okay.
Okay. What cake originally got its color from the chemical reaction between cocoa and vinegar?
Oh, the devil cake. The red cake. What is it? The red cake.
Oh, now he's getting there. You're getting hotter.
Isn't it what it's called?
Red velvet, I think it's called, Chef.
Oh, velvet. Pardon me. Not devil. Red velvet. Never mind.
Should we give you a half
red velvet
point?
Cake.
I'd give him a half point for
all
that.
Right, we're giving you a half point.
I got the wrong name. It wasn't devil. It was velvet. Sorry.
Your intent was correct.
Just how heavy was the largest lasagna ever created? A, 1 ton, B, 5 tons, or C, 8 tons?
Oh, my God. Just to gross me out just thinking of an 8-ton lasagna. I'm going to go with 8-ton. Why not?
Oh, you were wrong. It's 5 tons.
Well, you know.
5.29 tons, I guess, to be exact.
The question is why?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
All right, last question. You are at 1.5 out of 4 right now. Which puddings are bound with gelatin?
I'm not quite sure the answer to that question. What's the...
The correct answer is panna cotta.
Oh, it's Italian. Okay, you went the Italian way. The French way is bavarois, so that's the same idea.
Okay, so you get a full point then, if that's true. I thought bavarois was like a filling for a cake.
No, bavarois is a gelatined flan, basically. That's what it is.
What do you think, Brittany? Brittany's saying no way.
Are you just making up French words?
Bavarois is not a cake filling. He's right about that, but it's very different from a panna cotta. But he's right. It's got gelatin in it. So because he's French, I say we should let him have it.
Well, you can make a bavarois out of just about anything that has gelatin in it, including milk, cream, eggs, sugar. Basically, if you take a crème anglaise and you put gelatin in it, you have a bavarois. That's the base
Panna cotta has no eggs in it, but is set with gelatin.
Yeah.
Well, let's give it to him because he's still charitable. The biggest loser.
He's still lost, so it's fine.
Everyone loves him. Everyone loves the chef and the chapeau, so we're going to get
him. No, I just love Brittany. He's still lost.
I can be charitable if you still lose.
What
a compassionate soul. What a compassionate soul you are, yes.
That's funny.
All right, Tommy D, you have to beat 2.5.
I don't know if
that 0.5 is important.
Okay, which member of the royal family was the first to have white icing on their wedding cake? A, Queen Elizabeth II, B, Anne Boleyn, C, Queen Victoria, D, Queen Elizabeth I.
I'm going to say the first, Queen Elizabeth I.
You're wrong. It was
Queen
Victoria.
She was never married, if I'm not mistaken.
How do you know that?
Because I'm a nerd.
Do you watch The Crown?
I watch it all.
Oh, I need to watch that. Okay. What was the first flavor of cake mix produced by Betty Crocker?
Vanilla.
No.
Yellow.
No.
That's not a flavor.
Chocolate.
Nope.
Sprinkles.
No.
Okay.
Coconut.
Final answer.
Lemon.
Nope. It's a tough one. It was ginger.
Is it still available? I've never seen a ginger.
I don't know.
Do
they have spice?
Oh, yeah. They've got spice cake. Spice cake. Yeah, yeah.
This is a ginger.
Oh, same Jeff.
Well, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
All right. I didn't say spice either. So.
No, you didn't. Okay, which rather common staple is the basis for the regally named Queen of Puddings?
Tapioca.
No.
Rice.
Nope. We're going to do this again. It is bread. You have one out of three right now.
I don't even have one that I know of.
Oh, he doesn't have one.
Oh, oops. You have zero.
See,
out
I'm
of
an
three.
Honest fellow. Brittany would have called that out if I let
her. Brittany would have said it. I was opening my mouth to correct him.
Okay, question four. What is the most popular pudding in the world?
Pudding of chocolate.
No.
Okay.
Okay, it is sticky toffee pudding. That was kind of a trick.
Oh, that is
tricky question. Good job, Amy.
Thank you. Feeling spicy.
You know what they call that? A little ofer so far.
Yeah. All right, last question.
Thank God.
When do historians believe the first lasagna noodle appeared? A, Renaissance, B, Middle Ages, or C, the modern era?
I'm going to say the Renaissance, because I love the Medici family.
Nope, you're
We're
so wrong.
We're good friends.
Modern.
Middle Ages.
Oh, my
you
God, that's all back.
You have 0 out of 5, Bill. He's paying for shipping.
I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
I don't think I like when I have to pay for the prize and for shipping. Just doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel comfortable. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook and find our new producer, because the current one has been fired. You're listening to the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is formerly produced by Amy Richardson, sound and production by Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. And remember, if you missed any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.